then let's start. If there last call for questions. Okay. Oh yeah, sorry.
In the syllabus it says something about knowing a little bit about physics. Is there like a big application?
No, it's not. I'll be talking about a little biophysics, but no, I mean, you don't have to be a physicist to understand what I'm going to be talking about. It's only helpful, it's not required. Now notice that on each of these slides there's a red number in the lower right. Some of these slides also, though, have other numbers, like this slide 3 says table 1, 2. Okay, I'm going to try to always just talk about the slide number in my lecture so that on the recording you can follow along on the right slide. And also, I want to do it that way because you might not have a book that has this table in it. So if I give you a figure number, that's not going to help you. The slide number will allow you to follow along.
One more thing. Just to be very, very, very clear, when Gru comes back, there will be no more recordings. She does not record her lectures and post them. Just to be very clear, that's something specific to this half of your class.
Okay. Right.
Now Gru will be here.
Does she allow recordings? Yeah, I don't know whether she does or not. But you should be aware of that. That's the recordings will be... I probably speak a lot more quickly than she does, which is why I think it's important for me to record. Because it's not... If you miss something I say, no big deal if you can go back to the recording. But also, remember to slow me down during the live lecture if you need to. Don't wait for me to see you waving your hand if I don't see you. Just yell at me. All right? Anyway, follow along by the slide number. This first slide, obviously, as you see here, shows some key concepts in physiology. This is an unusual slide for me because it's full of text. Most of my slides are really just pictures, figures from the book that I'd like to explain. So, the reason I say it's unusual is because text slides, you might spend a lot of time writing down the words that are there, but remember, you already have this on. You have access to this already. You can write this down at home if you need to. But these four key concepts are not the only things that we'll be talking about this semester for this class, but these are some important things that hopefully you already know a little bit about. Homeostasis and control systems, for instance. What about that word homeostasis? What's it mean? What does homeo mean? Same, right? And stasis? Stasis means staying, right? Static means unchanging. Stasis is an unchanging state. So homeostasis really is a way of saying staying the same. Now that's a misleading word because no living thing ever stays the same. Organisms, which include just single cells, are dynamic structures. Dynamic is the opposite of static. Dynamic means changing. So that's because of the fact that cells and organisms are examples of what are called open systems. Open systems, maybe not surprisingly, are not closed systems. Well, a closed system is something that is cut off from its surroundings so that there's no exchange of materials or of energy between the system and the surroundings. Now, strictly speaking, there's no such thing as a closed system because it's impossible to completely isolate something from the rest of the universe. But some things are conspicuously open and they don't even try to close themselves off from the rest of the universe. And a good example of that would be a cell. A cell cannot be a closed system because it needs to continuously exchange materials and energy with its surroundings in order to continue to process the thousands and thousands of chemical reactions that really are what life is. What is the word that's given to the sum of all the chemical reactions that a cell undertakes? Metabolism, good. Right, metabolism comes in two forms. In other words, there's two parts to metabolism. Metabolism is the sum of, anyone know? Good, catabolism, and anabolism. Notice that the same prefaces as you have on, for instance, a AA battery, AA cell, right? There's a cathode and an anode, so those are opposites. Catabolism is the part of metabolism wherein smaller bits, did I say catabolism?
Yeah.
Okay, catabolism takes big things and splits it into smaller things, and in that process releases energy. Anabolism takes smaller things, joins them together into bigger things, and that process requires input of energy. So energy is very important to living things. That energy doesn't come from within the cell. It comes ultimately, in most cases, from the sun. So that's what I mean by the fact that we are open systems. So it's impossible for us to really stay unchanging. But homeostasis doesn't really mean that literally. Homeostasis refers to the fact that the internal environment is kept more or less constant within reasonable limits. So homeostasis is the maintenance of a relatively stable internal environment, whether that's inside the cell or within a multicellular organism. And control systems are required because homeostasis is not maintained on its own. In order for the various variables of life, things like temperature, pH, in order for those variables to be maintained within fairly narrow limits, there needs to be control systems in place. Control systems are a way for variables to be measured, to see whether there is a need for an adjustment, and then a way for an adjustment to be made if it's necessary for an adjustment to be made. Energy use, I've just talked about a little bit, but that's going to be a major theme. Structure and function relationships, certainly important, key concept. Now this is a physiology class. What is physiology? Well, I guess you don't have to know since you're taking the class, but and no one can guess what physiology is? It's the study of what? Function, right. Whereas the study of structure is what? Anatomy. And there are plenty of classes that are named anatomy and physiology, wherein you you study anatomy in greater detail than we're going to here, but it really isn't possible to just study physiology by itself. So we certainly are going to have some anatomy in here. And that's because you can't really explain how something works unless you explain how the parts that make up that system operate and therefore talk about those parts. You also really, it's easier to talk purely about anatomy, but that's impossible strictly speaking as well. Anyway, though, this class is definitely going to be more physiology oriented than anatomy, anatomically oriented. But Why is there such a coupling between structure and function? Well, several reasons. One reason is that things work the way they do because of how they're made. But another thing is this, the notion of evolution. Structure comes to be through the process of evolution, which is a stochastic process, which is not exactly the same thing as random, but it's very similar. Evolution occurs because of mutations. Mutations that occur either randomly or because of some environmental influence. But the thing is that mutations cause changes in proteins. Now, why do they cause changes in proteins? Well, yeah, the complementary base pairing is definitely involved. Mutations occur in what kind of macromolecule? Nucleic acids, right. By the way, what are the four macromolecules of life? No, those are the, that's all right, those are the, all within nucleic acids. There's four kinds of macromolecules, which just means large molecules. Carbohydrates, nucleic acids, lipids, proteins. Okay, nucleic acids include DNA and RNA, right? So when we talk about mutations, mutations are occurring to those molecules, to DNA molecules. Why does that end up causing a change in a protein? Because of what DNA does. You know, we tend to say that DNA gives us all of our traits. That's in one sense true, but really all DNA does is provide an instruction set for how to build the various proteins that our cells require. Proteins really do all the work. And so the traits that we have are directly a result of what proteins we have. And by traits, I mean all of our traits, not just how we look. How we act depends on what proteins our cells are able to make, which in turn depends on what genes we have. Genes are sections of DNA. So mutations directly affect DNA and then indirectly affect protein structure, and that's why from generation to generation there can be differences because of mutation in structure. All right, now that's just one reason why generation to generation there are differences, but that's the important reason that drives evolution. Now mutations are usually bad, meaning that the change that occurs in the organism that has that mutation usually is not as fit as one that doesn't. But every once in a while, a mutation will give a benefit to whatever cell or multicellular organism we're talking about. And if it gives a benefit, then it's likely to be passed on. That's the whole idea behind evolution. All right? And that's why structures, which seem like they're perfectly designed for a function, are able to come about because they work. The things that didn't work, we don't see because those things have died. All right? And so structure and function are hand in hand. And that's a big concept in actually all of biology, not just anatomy and physiology. Then finally, communication. Communication is important because there needs to be signals sent from one place within a cell to another place within the same cell, but also from cell to cell within a multicellular organism. Without signals, there's no information. without information, there can't be any control system. Without any control system, there can't possibly be homeostasis. And without homeostasis, there isn't the maintenance of life. So the thing dies. All right, so any questions on this first slide? Well, then let's look at slide 4, which is all about the hierarchical organization of life. Hierarchical meaning within a nested hierarchy where there's one group that's within a bigger group, which is then within a bigger group, and so on. So if you look at the boxes here, the lowest level that biologists concern themselves with are atoms. Now, of course, atoms, you can break down atoms into smaller particles, right, subatomic particles, but then you're really not talking about biology, you're talking about chemistry or physics. Atoms, though, we concern ourselves with atoms and molecules to a certain extent within biology. You see here, though, chemistry deals with atoms and molecules. The point here is that this is hierarchical because atoms make up, groups of atoms make up molecules, as I'm sure you're aware. Groups of molecules then make up, actually I would inject an additional level here. Groups of molecules make up subcellular structures called what? Organelles, good. That's assuming we're talking about a eukaryotic cell. Is everyone familiar with the word eukaryote? This word, by the way, eu means what? True, right. And karyo, karyon, which is what that comes from, meaning kernel, refers to a nucleus. So a eukaryotic cell is one that has a true nucleus and other membrane-bound organelles. Now that's not all cells, but that's all of our cells. That's all animal cells. That's all plant cells. That's all fungal cells. It's a whole big group of organisms. What are prokaryotic cells? Bacteria, for instance, yes. Well, we're not going to be talking about bacteria in here too much. We are eukaryotic organisms. And so groups of molecules combine to form subcellular structures called organelles. Organelles form bigger structures called cells. Now, that's an important stopping point at cells. And that's because the cell is the unit of life, meaning that the cell is the smallest group here, the smallest structure that is able to carry on all of the characteristics of life as we define them, things like reproduction, so on. The cell is as small as an organism is able to be. Now, there are certain things that are smaller than cells that we can say are biotic. Biotic just means that they have something to do with life, but they are not organisms. What's an example of something that's smaller than a cell that's not an organism? A virus is a perfect example, yeah. Now, you can argue whether a virus is living or not. You know, and there would be a good argument on both sides of that argument. But it's certainly not true that a virus is an organism. Only things that consist of at least one cell are officially organisms. Well, for a single-celled organism, cell is the end of the line, right? As far as organism is concerned. But in multicellular organisms, groups of cells group together to form the bigger hierarchical level tissues. And there are four kinds of tissues that we humans have. Anyone know what those are? I can't really hear that. Muscle tissue is one type. Nervous tissue, that's two. Connective tissue, what is it? Epithelial tissue, good. Those are the four tissue types. And so tissues of different kinds group together in various ways to form bigger structures called organs. What makes an organ is, what makes something an organ is simply that it's a collection of tissues that operate as a unit, more or less to perform a single or a small set of functions. But organs that are completely different organs can combine into what are called organ systems, that even though the individual organs do different jobs, they do jobs that are related to each other for a common purpose. And organ systems are things like the endocrine system, the reproductive system, the digestive system, and so on. And so there are multiple organ systems, which we'll be talking about. But when you consider all of the organ systems combined, that makes up an organism. An organism that is like we are. Of course, organism and cell are the same thing for a bacterium. But then you can keep going, of course, because we as organisms form bigger groups, which are called populations, as other species form their own populations. So you have groups of populations forming ecosystems, and then finally all of the ecosystems combine into the one biosphere that we're still assuming that there's only life here. Or I mean, not assuming that, we've only found life here. All right, so these hierarchical levels, notice, fit in to these different spheres of science, going from chemistry all the way up to ecology. But notice where they overlap and where they exclude each other. In other words, ecology is not dealing with atoms. Physiology, notice, is the broadest of all of them. So, not surprisingly, this course has a lot of broad sweeping and disparate information in it. That's because you can talk about the physiology of a population, or you can talk about molecular physiology. Those are the extremes according to this, right? And everything in between. Slide 5 is another table. This is just a listing of the organ systems. I'm not going to read this to you because you can read tables. But notice the system names. There's even some argument about whether these should be the names. Biologists argue about a lot of things. The circulatory system, some people call the cardiovascular system. Actually, technically speaking, I say that the cardiovascular system is not an official organ system. It is a subset of the circulatory system. What's the difference? Well, cardiovascular means having to deal with, having to do with the heart and vessels. So the cardiovascular system really technically doesn't include the blood. If you include the blood along with the heart and the vessels, then you have the circulatory system. Another thing is that people tend to talk about the immune system. That's really, in my book, not an official organ system, as I've defined it on the previous slide. There's definitely an immune system, but it's really a group of functions by organs that are spread out among most of the other organ systems. So when I use immune system, I really use it as a functional term rather than a structural term. It's not a specific group of organs. Anyway, these these are our organ systems, and if we look at the lecture schedule, my lectures are the yellow ones. Notice that I'm really going to be spending at least more than half of the time in here with you dealing with stuff that has to do with the nervous system. Okay? Not right away. We have a couple things to get through first. But the nervous system, as far as number of lectures is concerned, is the majority. And that will lead into also the endocrine system. Now, what do the nervous system and the endocrine system have in common? They do have communication in common, yes. And that makes them the two major control systems at the organ system level. Now you can talk about a control system. A control system can be as simple as a group of molecules within a cell. But as far as organ systems are concerned, there are two that are control systems, meaning that their job is to control all the other organ systems of the body. And those two control systems are the nervous system and the endocrine system. And they overlap both functionally and structurally. There are certain things that you can legitimately say are part of both the nervous system and the endocrine system. Also, the jobs that these two systems do can be exactly the same thing in certain cases, even though they go about it in different ways. They are both control systems, though. Okay, slide 6 is a cartoon that shows you how a mammalian body is compartmentalized. So you have this overall border in tan that defines the body's exterior. And of course, that's anything outside of that is not part of the body. Anything that's inside of it is part of the body. But notice that there are several openings. All right? Where you see arrows, double arrows in certain cases, but arrows through these openings denoting a passage of materials. So this is a schematic representation of what I've explained earlier, is that we are an open system. All right? Well, what you see from this, and if you might not have ever thought about it this way, is that, for instance, the digestive system is made up of various organs that together form a tube that goes from mouth to anus. That whole tube, as you'll be talking about later, I think, is called the alimentary canal. Aliment means food or nutriment. But anyway, the alimentary canal is the continuous tube from mouth to anus. Now, we tend to think in just everyday terms that we take food into our body when we eat, but we don't. Not unless you inject peanut butter into your vessels or something like that. When you eat, that food is not inside your body. It's within the lumen, or the hollow part, of a tube that your body is wrapped around. Right? So in a very simple form, you can think of yourself as like a bead, a cylindrical bead with a hole through it that the string would go through. To be inside the bead would be meaning in the interior of the glass, assuming it's made of glass. But where the string goes is not inside the bead, right? The bead just wraps around that. Well, the same thing is true for the various dead ends that we have. This isn't a dead end. It's a thoroughfare that goes all the way through. The lungs, though, it's the same thing. When we take air, when we breathe in air, we're not putting that into our internal environment. We're putting it into sac-like structures that make up the lungs that are outside of our body still. It's just that, you know, planets. It's continuous with the air that surrounds us. So it is outside of our body, but we have part of our body is wrapped around those. See what I'm saying? Same thing for the uterus. It's a dead end. It's not inside the body. Well, the uterus is inside the body, but the lumen of the uterus is continuous with the outside of the body, is what I'm saying. All right, well, we also have a compartment that is enclosed by vessels. And that's illustrated there with the circulatory system. Now notice, well, we are examples of animals that have closed circulatory systems, meaning that that whole system of plumbing is sealed off. So the circulatory system, where the blood resides, is its own compartment within the body. But obviously there's a lot of stuff that our bodies are made of, up of, that are not the blood, that are outside of those vessels, but still inside of our skin. All right? Well, there are a couple more compartments that we can talk about. Our body is made up of course, cells. To say that we're multicellular is not really doing justice to how multicellular we are. We're made up of literally 100 or so trillion cells of our own. Now that is a hell of a big number. I mean, I know you know what a trillion is, but it's really hard to realize how big that is. That's 100,000 cells that are just your cells. I say it that way because that really is the minority of cells that your body space is made up of. Because for every one of your own cells, there's between 10 and 100 other cells, bacteria mostly, that live in you and on you. Those are not your cells because they're not your DNA. But you are vastly outnumbered, no matter how clean you are, by bacteria. Yeah, I know. So there are compartments that we talk about in the body. Those cells form compartments. Because anything that's interior to those plasma membranes is its own little compartment. And so that compartment is called what? The intracellular fluid. Okay? What's another name for the intracellular fluid? No, not interstitial. That's not the same thing. Cytosol. Cytosol and intracellular fluid can be used more or less interchangeably. Cytosol specifically refers to the liquid portion of the interior of a cell versus cytoplasm, which is everything between the nucleus and the plasma membrane, including the solid stuff. But there are liquid compartments that are very important. Cytosol is one. And then also between all of your trillions of cells, in other words, outside of the cells, and also outside of the blood, there is interstitial fluid. Okay? Interstitial fluid is its own compartment. And all of those compartments... Oh, yeah. As long as I can see it. All of those compartments are aqueous solutions, meaning they are... Water is the solvent, and then there are various solutes in there, which is why solution chemistry can go on in your body, and that's what life is. So that's enough for today, since I'm 1 minute over.